This week on Barbell Shrug, we have guest Robert Daniel, international sumo wrestler and former bodybuilder. We will talk about the top three things that CrossFitters can learn from bodybuilders.
Yo, this is CTP, and you're listening to the Barbell Shrug Podcast, the number one strength and conditioning podcast for CrossFitters.
If you want to check out the video version, which you should, go to fitter.tv and watch that, because it's way cooler than just listening.
And how do you spell fitter.tv there, Mr. Bledsoe?
F-I-T-R.tv.
He's a good speller. All right, while you're there, definitely go and sign up for the newsletter. As part of signing up for the newsletter, you'll get a video that Mike made where he shows you the top seven snatch mistakes that you're probably making that are keeping you from hitting that next PR and lifting some big weight.
Yeah, look at the seminars, tune into the show, and get ready to become a more awesomer version of
you. We give you the tools you need to succeed.
You become a tool.
Welcome to Barbell Shrugged. I'm Mike Bledsoe here with Doug Larson and Chris Moore.
Yeah.
And our guest, Robert Daniel, sumo wrestler extraordinaire, international competitor.
You heard that right, by
first,
the way.
First, I want to remind you guys to go to barbellshrugged.com, sign up for the newsletter. Just go over there on the right side of the page and put your email in. Go to our fan page, like us. Go to Twitter, follow us at Barbell Shrugged. And today,
is that all you remember?
That's my brain is full. Also, go to check out the weight gain challenge. We have that going on right now. We're 3 weeks into the weight gain challenge, and it is going really, really well.
Stupendously well.
We were going to see how it went, and we were like, well, maybe we'll do another one in 6 months, October time frame, and we decided otherwise. What we did was we put. If you go to the shop, if you go to the store on our website, you can go in there and you go to the weight gain challenge. If you click on that product link, it'll take you to a product page where you can put your email in. So if you're interested in starting the weight gain challenge in the future, go there, put your email in, and Doug's going to send you some information. He's going to send you a video about how to gain weight, and you'll be on the list. So we'll be able to notify you when we're going to do it. We're probably actually going to launch that in the next 2.5 months. We already have so many people signing up. We can only take a certain amount of people at a time, so we have we may be relaunching that again in shorter than 6 months, just because of how much interest we've garnered on it.
Yeah, the last one sold out weeks before the cutoff date. So if you want to be on that list again, go to the page Mike was just talking about. Go to the product page, put your name and your email in, because we're going to give the people on that list priority over the whole rest of our newsletter list as far as sign up for this particular program, just because last time it sold out so quickly. So get your name on that list, and you'll get first crack at signing up for the next round, which we'll hopefully start here in the next 2 months or so.
If you snooze, you lose.
Thanks, Chris. All right, Robert.
actually, one more thing. We also got Justin Thacker's
oh, that's right.
Weightlifting seminar coming up here like in the next 2 or 3 weeks. That's going to be a live recording of a seminar. So it's not an actual seminar. Really, we're doing it for the recording, and we're going to let people come and watch the recording happen. And then also with all the people with that small group of people that are going to be there watching, they'll be, you know, doing the lifts, and Justin will be correcting their form, and you'll more or less be a part of the product. So if you don't mind being on camera and you want to have a world-class weightlifter come and critique your form and teach you the lifts, then May 11th and 12th, starting at noon on the 11th and going to about 6 or 7 p.m., and then starting at 9 a.m. on the 12th and going to about 4 in the afternoon, we're going to have a two-day weightlifting recording where Justin Thacker is coming down from St. Louis.
Episode 34
was Justin Thacker's episode. I know.
It's on your palms. Show me your palms. Well, they're hairy, but I don't see any numbers.
Wow.
Wow. See that?
Yeah, so if you want to learn a little bit about Justin Thacker, we did an entire episode with him, episode 34, and he will be down here at Faction and to do that two-day weightlifting seminar. So that's coming up here in a couple of weeks. If you want to come attend that live event, then again, go to the shop and where do we put that in the shop? Under the seminars? Yeah.
It's under seminars.
Click on seminars and click on
put the seminar under the seminars.
Crazy. What?
Genius.
Justin Thacker Weightlifting Seminar, if you're interested in coming to that live event.
Yes. All right. Robert Daniel, you're a international sumo wrestling athlete, former bodybuilder, other martial arts, and cheerleader.
That's right.
All right.
You don't see that. All right,
good show. I think I'm probably the only one.
Okay. Hopefully I covered all the best points already, but if you want to take us through a short, maybe a 2 or 3 minute history of your athletic career.
Yeah, well, you know, in high school, I was playing football as a freshman, and I was walking by a teacher's, the lady that ran the cheerleading squad, and she said, "Hey, come here for a second, let me talk to you." And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "You're never going to play football in the NFL. You're probably never going to play in college, but you get a scholarship in cheerleading." I was my height right now at 135 pounds. I'm like, "Yeah,
I've seen that picture of you."
Really?
But yeah, but she goes, she looked down at my feet and she goes, "No, you're going to be a big man." I'm like, "Okay, whatever, whatever." Well, because I didn't think I was going to be large, I got into cheerleading. You know, all men, depending on their sexual orientation, get into cheerleading for the women. That's the bottom line. I'll say it. It's the truth. However,
yeah, you're surrounded by the hottest chicks in school for like every afternoon all year long.
Right, exactly. But very quickly, but along with the hotness comes, you know, the ego and the drama and all that. So you very quickly you get into the athletic aspect. And so I did that all through high school, college, and grad school. She was right. I got scholarships, full ride to University of Kentucky.
Sweet.
And then went to grad school, University of Hawaii, and for 2 years to get my graduate degree. So it went well. I always wanted to bodybuild. So right when I got done, I stopped cheering in 96, started training for my first bodybuilding show, and did my first show, a novice show, in 97. And I've probably done, I don't know, from 07 to 2010, I probably did about 20 shows. And then I did one this summer, just kind of coming out of retirement kind of thing.
Oh,
just,
word.
Just for kicks.
Now, I'm assuming that when you did cheerleading, you were probably hitting the weights pretty hard. I mean, you may have been doing bodybuilding that's not competitively.
Correct.
In preparation for that.
Correct. Well, yeah, everything that I wanted to do was to get bigger. I knew this. When I would go to these cheerleading camps and I'd see the guys that could really put the girls in the air, they were bigger, stronger guys. And so
that
that's what
sense.
I wanted to be. Physics being what it is. But yeah, they. So I wanted to just get bigger. So that's what I did. And it's taken me 30 years, but I got it to 250 pounds. So, you know, just kind of put it on. But after I got done bodybuilding, started, you know, taking some interest in MMA, jiu-jitsu, that sort of thing. But when I lived in Hawaii, I lived in Hawaii for actually 10 years, and I would see sumo on the sporting news, you know, the 5 o'clock, 10 o'clock, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, these guys are really scrapping. You know, at first you think, oh, as Americans, we think it's just a couple of fat guys bumping bellies.
Yeah.
But no,
you're wrong.
They're going at it. Yeah. And so I was like, wow, this is a real deal. I'd love to do this one day. I could do this, that explosion, that's what I'm good at, that type of thing. And I was doing some stuff at Memphis Judo and Jiu-Jitsu, and I told Dave Ferguson, I said, "Hey, man, I think I'm going to enter a sumo competition." He goes, "That sounds like a great idea. That sounds like it'd be perfect for you." I don't know if that meant because MMA is not perfect for you.
You're not going to be good at anything else.
Right.
You should do that.
One time he told
your
me.
Your feet are too big.
He said, right. He said, cardio-wise, it's just not your thing. What he told me we were doing, I forgot what we were doing one day, but he's like, you know, if the UFC was decided, the heavyweight championship was decided by a one-minute fight with no rounds, you'd have a shot. After
right.
a minute,
that's what goes for every big guy.
Man. Right. After a minute, you're a punching bag. So
you get a minute into it and you realize all the strength in the world is not going to save you from this ass kicking.
Right. Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Now, I guess I had a thought. Sumo must have a following in Hawaii because we have a Yokozuna from Hawaii, right?
There's Yokozuna and quite a few, I think two or three Ozeki and some other top ranked guys.
And what does that mean?
Yokozuna,
oh, Doug, get with it. Come on.
Yokozuna is
sounds
the,
like someone did their research before the podcast.
That's right.
For the audience, I meant.
Yokozuna is actually the grand champion. And then Ozeki is the level.
These are people.
These are people. Yeah. Okay. Yokozuna, generally, there's only two Yokozuna at a time, sometimes one. But and then they have like Ozeki, so they have East and West divisions, and you have Yokozuna. That's what we have now. And then there's like three Ozeki on each side.
So you're a badass if you're the Yokozuna.
Yes,
I mean, because if you watch these dudes compete, they're the top guys. Like there's one guy I remember who was like 350 pounds. Mm-hmm. I don't know his height. He may be 6 foot tall. This guy was based like the most intense offensive lineman I'd ever seen. But doing sumo, like he would explode right. out. From that position, that three-point stance, and just take a 500-pound dude and launch him off the platform.
Yeah.
It's the most incredible damn thing I've ever seen in my life. And I've seen lots of incredible damn things. And this is up there. This is like top 10 of the incredible things Christopher's ever seen in his life.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, that's kind of the whole name of the game there. That opening, that charge, it's called the tachi ai. That's 90% of the game right there. You know, it's like in bodybuilding, that first look that they get at the competitors when they first, before you do one pose, you got to understand that's 90% of the game. Same thing in sumo. You get a good tachi ai, you get him backwards, his chin up and he's back on his heels, it's going to have a hard time recovering.
Yeah.
But, you know, when we were at Memphis Judo and Jiu-Jitsu, Dave got some guys together, Mike Ostrowski from Judo and Jeff Presley wrestling, and got some guys to show me some stuff. And I ended up, my first tournament was the national championship in 2009, and I got a bronze. And I was like, whoa, I didn't know, you know,
yeah,
that was going to happen.
But that's encouraging.
Right.
That's incredible.
Right. You know,
I think I'll stick with this.
All with Mike's help.
That's right.
From the video, Mike's apparently famous in the sumo
world.
That's
right. That's right.
Yeah. I was very key in that. That bronze medal.
Did you let him
that
wrestle
was
you?
After. No, that was after. Oh, that was when I was done. Going into my second season. Well, you know, when
you did better the second season, right?
Well, I've moved up every year. I've moved up every season.
Since I helped you.
That's right. That's right. But
since I allowed you to throw me around like a rag doll.
No, I just flung my body into him as hard as I could.
So I didn't have training partners, right? Uh-huh. So whenever I could get some type of training, so I said, man, I just need somebody to run into me, just get used to taking the hit, you know, just keep that contact. And Mike goes, well, I play football, but I can run into you. And I'm like, well, how much do you weigh? 180 or whatever. And I said, oh, okay. And so I don't know who was filming. It might have been Doug.
I was filming. I'll get the camera.
At the time, I didn't know anybody was filming. But, you know, we start 28 inches away in sumo, mm-hmm. right? And then, but he was literally 3 yards away from me. And so I'd say hakioi, which means begin. And I would just take my hands up and take a half step towards him. He would run full speed and slam me. My goal was to not be moved. And he would move me an inch or two. But we did
not
it.
Much.
But we did it over and over and over. And he was literally sprinting at me with his head first, like he was going to run a wall down. And so two years ago, I'm at Nationals. We're at the competitor meeting, right? And this guy, Kenna Heffernan, who's from Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And Kenna is our grand champion. And Kenna goes, Rob. And he speaks in pidgin. You know, he's talking to me. I was living in Hawaii. So he's like, hey, bro. You know, this video, there's a video we saw of you, of a guy, little guy, running into you over and over and over again. He said, we stayed laughing and laughing and laughing. We keep playing over and over again. So I'm like, yeah, that's pretty funny. I was like, that's my buddy Mike. I said, I'll remind him. And then I'd see you and I didn't think about it when I did. Then last year I'm in Amsterdam at the Dutch Open and the tournament finishes. And there's a guy from Poland comes up to me in broken English and basically says the same thing. Hey, isn't there a video of you with some guy running over? It was hilarious.
Are you more famous for this or for the show?
I might be more famous for this. Yeah. So,
maybe. People come up to you in the street, sign this, please, run into me, please.
Right.
Huge fat guys everywhere I go. I want my autograph.
You know, I think what they were doing was like oh, well, this couldn't possibly, you know, because they're getting to do, at the time, I couldn't do any real practice. I didn't have any, you know, I have a team.
Yeah.
So they're doing real practice. So this is what I could get. Man, let's have one guy run into me 100 times. You know, that's all we had. So that's, I think, was the funny part. And the fact that we did it and put it on video for, you know, however many times that was.
Force equals mass times acceleration.
That's what they say.
True story.
That's what they say.
All right. So actually on that note, so the needs for sumo, the sporting needs, you know, strength, power, speed, things mm-hmm. like that are very different than the needs for a bodybuilder.
Yes.
So did the training for bodybuilding before sumo contribute a lot to your success in sumo? And how is the strength training different for the two sports?
Initially, I will say this. Being bigger and stronger, having a bigger muscle belly, and you know, being in exercise science, you know this, the bigger a muscle belly is, you know, the thicker it is, the bigger the cross, what's it called?
Cross-section
area. Yeah, that too.
So the cross-section. For the viewers at home, you have a degree in exercise science as well.
Yes, yep. Yes. So, but obviously I don't use it. this cross-sectional area, even if it's water, it's got a bigger muscle, is going to be a stronger muscle. That's the way, part of the way creatine works, right? Is just makes the water bloated. I mean, the muscle bloated, so there's going to be stronger. So anywho, that helped initially. But as the competitors got better, I needed to, one, be more explosive. I mean, I needed the same strength, but with much more speed.
That's what you don't train in bodybuilding.
Correct. You really train you try to be the least efficient possible in every movement, so the muscle does the most work.
You get explosive mm-hmm. diarrhea from the diet, but you don't get explosive on your body.
Right. Yeah, using speed and momentum in bodybuilding is counterproductive for breaking down the muscle and spurring muscle growth.
Correct.
And yeah. so for a sumo wrestler to train just like a bodybuilder would make them slow and not explosive.
Right.
For a bodybuilder to train explosive like a sumo wrestler, they wouldn't be able to put on as much muscle mass as quickly.
Correct. Yeah, and you would just be an injured sumo wrestler and an injured bodybuilder if you try to do both. They're so vastly different energy systems. And you know from doing martial arts that, you know, when you're lifting weights, you can control the environment. I can control how hard I go. Even with somebody's coaching me, I can still control. But if I'm sparring, whether it be sumo, jujitsu, whatever, I'm gonna have to defend as hard as he's attacking, or vice versa. So you have that variable, and then you try to throw some bodybuilding. In the beginning, yeah, I tried to do still some, you know, that vanity stayed with me, and not that it's gone, but you know, and yeah, you just end up getting injured.
Mm-hmm.
So,
actually, like, on that point, before I had my shoulder surgery 4 or 5 years ago now, the last like 3 or 4 times that I hurt my shoulder at MMA practice was after I did a ton of upper body training. It wasn't necessarily bodybuilding, but I did a high volume upper body, you know, a couple hours before I went to practice. And then when I was fatigued from that, then my shoulder was not as stable, and I ended up hurting my shoulder. It happened like multiple times in a row before I learned my lesson.
I bet. You know, it's that analogy of the spring. You can pull the spring from one side and it'll snap back. You can bring it from the other side, it'll snap back. But if you pull both sides together, you're going to stretch the spring out. And that's what generally I think happens, you know, something like that. Two different energy systems at the same time training is going to end up at an intense level. So I think it's going to be bad news.
Analogies.
I love a good analogy. An allegory.
Springs.
An allegory.
Allegory as well. Yeah, I guess pre-fatiguing before an event where somebody is trying to hurt you is maybe on not on the high list of things I would do.
Yeah,
I could get away with that when I was younger, but I can't do it anymore.
Oh, so much we could get away with when we were younger.
Mm-hmm. You got the show notes, Doug. For some reason, I don't have them.
You have the show notes?
While these guys look at their phones.
What? You didn't send me the show notes.
Oh,
what
God.
The hell?
What strikes me about...
I don't even know what to talk about now.
Every time I look at sumo training, weight training-wise, I think about how similar it is to me to what I needed when I was an offensive lineman.
I agree.
Like, what makes, like, you know, Olympic weightlifting so fascinating and unique? Well, one, it's really complicated. But two, you pick a weight off the ground, explosively extend the hips, and then dive bomb underneath and get driven down and ricochet back up. So obviously regular squats, doing that all the time, it's a very specific activity. What's cool about like being an offensive lineman or a sumo guy is that you're going from a state of, you know, flex knees and hips and perfect stillness to unbelievable all out explosion in the
Correct.
Absolutely in a blink of an eye. So it's like a totally different sort of activity than like on football. It's even different than what a linebacker or a running back or anybody else does. Cause mm-hmm. it's, offensive defensive linemen are just basically like sumo wrestlers. They're staring each other down. One side knows when they're going, one side doesn't, which makes it kind of a interesting. Is that the same in sumo though, right?
Well, in the pros, it is. Once they have 3 hands on the ground, they just start themselves, and the ref yells, "Hockey movement begin. Let's get
it's
on."
Intense.
But in amateur, the referee will wait till all 4 hands are on the ground, and then he says, "Hockey." A lot of people will try to jump start because that's how you get the speed right on the next guy. You get him going back, you go forward. And they do that because there's no penalty in amateur sumo for jump starting. They'll start you over 100 times. Now, the referee might scold you, but there's no penalty. So why not go ahead and jump start?
Yeah. And to me, it's a lesson in just how like people always get caught up like, what is the right and wrong list of exercise? And it's kind of horseshit because like for Olympic weightlifter, if you did lots of like wider stance box squatting, you'd be an idiot. That would not transfer at all to Olympic weightlifting. Mm-hmm. You would catch a clean and dump it immediately and not be able to stand up every single time from now until the end of time. But for sumo, standing in your sumo stance, hips far back on a box with a deliberately long pause, and then having somebody externally cue you to instantly squat as fast as possible for just one clean, crisp rep is a highly effective way to actually train in a pretty close way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fascinatingly different kind of activity.
I agree. That, you know, you're not the only person. I've had people say the only type of squats you need to be doing is box squats. And these are guys that aren't sumo guys. They just seen the matches on YouTube or Facebook, and they're like, yeah, that's exactly you need to have those hips back, the feet wide, the toes out, and then come out of that hole.
So, yeah, so, it might be inverse. Like usually you'd probably be better off doing some box squats in the off season and working into regular squatting if you're like if you're doing CrossFit or weightlifting or something. But in sumo, it might be like to get a break, you do some regular squats way away from your competition. Then the closer you get, the more you get more specific with wide stance maybe even a bit of band, a deliberately low pause or a long pause. You might even squat to high box if that's the that's representative of where your hip angle is. I'm not quite sure. I haven't looked at the video of those guys in position, but yeah, it's radically different.
Yeah,
in a bunch of awesome ways.
I'd like to see maybe box squat for being explosive from that pause, but then also doing maybe heavy cleans or something like that, being able to absorb a really heavy load as well, because you have to be able to absorb the hit as well. So if you want to deliver explosiveness and be able to absorb it too.
Well, yeah, like when you, you know, if you've noticed that I did the Olympic meet at y'all's place, and my goal is, I'd like to do, in addition to the sumo, if I have the breaks in the schedule, I'd like to do one Olympic. If everything in the perfect world, I would be able to do one Olympic meet a year, one powerlifting meet a year, one strongman event a year, and a bodybuilding event a year, just for fun. The bodybuilding's fun. The other ones, the other three.
I don't know if anybody's ever done that.
The other,
that's hardcore, man.
It's the Bo Jackson of strength sports.
That's right. Wow.
Not a bad thing to be.
But the goal is those other three are nothing but cross training for sumo. The whole point of me being a better Olympic weightlifter, strongman, or powerlifter is to improve my sumo game.
That's a very good point.
So, yeah, and the bodybuilding is just that, man, I do, like Jennifer, my fiance, tells me, I get sumo bloated, is what she says, when it's all sumo technique practice and no cardio. So
the spirit of sumo starts taking
that's
over.
That's right. That's right.
Is there honey, pass the soy sauce. You're eating Cheerios. I know, but I'm not going to get bloated here.
So I learned the other night that there's weight classes, and it's not just a heavyweight and lightweight.
Right.
There's how many weight classes are, what are they?
Internationally right now, there's four. There is, now they do them in kilos, but since most of y'all's audience, I'm sure, is American, I'll do the
not necessarily
English system. But
you can talk in kilos, that's fine.
Well, I don't know. No, but you have the...
Oh, so you're covering up.
Right. There you go. You have the 187, I think is 85 kilos.
That's right.
85 kilos and under is one weight class. Then you have 85... You have what's called under 115, which is my weight class. That's middleweight, which is people laugh because there's no way you're middleweight. Well, middleweight in sumo is 253 pounds or under. So you get to think some of those heavyweights are 600 pounds.
Oh, my God.
So,
and by the way, you can call them fat all you want, but they'll just jump right over you or go right through you in an instant before you even have time to react.
So
don't confuse being fat with slow and weak.
Don't make fun of sumo wrestlers.
Yeah, definitely don't do that.
Not in an enclosed area where there's no escape route.
Unless you got the skills to navigate that body for 5 minutes till the guy gets tired, then you can choke him out or armbar him. If you can do that, maybe talk shit or something. Right. Don't do it otherwise.
Y'all see the UFC, like UFC single digits, 4 or 5, where the Savate guy was fighting against the...
Manny Yarborough. The guy, the sumo guy?
Oh, yeah, fighting against sumo wrestler.
Emmanuel Yarborough. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And he kicked him in the teeth?
Yes.
And his teeth went flying out right on
the
camera?
The sumo guy got kicked in the teeth?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah, so if you're that guy, talk shit.
Yeah, he took a knee, and the dude just fucking kicked him right in the teeth.
Ooh.
Yes. Yeah. No, well, I think actually, no, I was wrong. That's another guy. But Manny was in one of the first ones. I was saying he did some pride fighting too, but he's the only Americans ever won world championships.
Oh yeah.
He's 600. He was when I
he's like 6'8", isn't he?
I'm he's 6'9", like, and when I didn't wrestle against him, he had to drop out of a tournament. I was going to wrestle him in the open division.
You were going to wrestle him?
Yeah, in the open division, because this I didn't finish my statement. I got detracted, but you have the heavyweights is over 115. Then we have open weight, which is anybody can throw their hat in the ring. So I was actually going to meet Manny in the next match, and I got a bye because he forfeit because he'd gotten injured. And what had happened was he was fighting a lightweight and was going to fall on him and actually put his hand down. Like, I mean, I was watching the match. And
he crushed his own hand?
He hyperextended his elbow.
Yeah.
But just to keep him from, you know, he would have killed the guy. The guy was 160 pounds. I mean, he literally would have.
Oh, my God.
It's like dropping a Volkswagen on him. So,
wow. Yeah,
and he's a nice guy. He just stands up and moves forward. And if you can't get around him, you're not pushing him back. You know,
No way. Stepping with a guy that's
oh come on Mike now wouldn't you roll the dice a little bit and wrestle getting there and tussle with a guy
I'm scared now in the moment
you have the international
here, I'm scared sitting in this room but in the moment I might just do it
remember during your wrestling match when that guy was probably like 350 and he was on top of you you're like pushing into a big wet blanket like you couldn't get
out.
Well, I was twice as big.
I was pre-fatigued. I was only I mean, for me getting skinny means I'm 250 or 245. That means I'm compromised.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, this guy got on top of me and it was just he was at least 350. I mean, he's a big dude.
Yeah, he was tall too.
And I just remember like it was just like having the Stay Puff Marshmallow Man right in my face.
You push, nothing happens.
I like put all my force into it, and my hand just wouldn't meet bone. I couldn't exert force to move his mass. I ended up choking that bitch. I would have had it if I knew what I was doing. Yeah. You remember, you were all there too.
That was a your novice thing.
I think we have a video somewhere.
It was my only foray into competitive fighting. Right. It was fun as hell, but I'd never been so exhausted in my life. And afterwards, I'm laying in the floor of the Honor Classic.
It's beautiful. Beautiful.
Auditorium or whatever the fuck. And Doug's like, all right, we'll take a little break and we'll put your gi on. You can do it again in the gi division. I'm like, no. Think I'm quitting here, Doug?
No, I can't.
Think I'm done.
You are mistaken.
Because now I'm pre-fatigued, and if I wear that gi, I'm basically, you know, giving a guy a weapon to use against me. So I'm like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing with this.
Right. Nationals is June 22nd.
June 22nd in Kansas City, Missouri this year.
So if you are in the Kansas City area, June 22nd, you should go check it out.
Independence, Missouri, actually, which is a suburb, of course.
Okay. And we were talking, we were at the bar on Sunday.
A lot of talking happens at the bar.
A lot of talking happens at the bar. And you said, hey, they have an 85-kilo weight class. And Doug and I were both like, we're 85 kilos.
Right.
We've both been drinking.
Yeah. We've been drinking beer since 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It's like, let's make some good decisions.
Shit, yeah, I'll sumo wrestle.
So, but you said that anyone can attend and anyone can register for this thing.
You don't have to qualify. You know, sumo is still small enough in the U.S. where, you know, people can jump in. And I see guys show up to the national championships like I did when they've never ever competed. Like, I've never seen him at another tournament, and I go to a lot of the tournaments and they just show up, and some of them do really well, you know. Some of them do well, like my first one, I got a bronze, and you have that happen every once in a while. But yeah, you just throw your hat in the ring and train for it, you know. So
I am actually not sure if my schedule's open that weekend.
Oh, shut up. You're always backing out.
No, what I'm saying
I've
is,
got a wedding to go to, Robert. I gotta be at the thing.
If I feel like there's something that weekend, I know there's something something the weekend after, but if that weekend's open, I plan on doing sumo for the first time.
Well, when I get back from my honeymoon here on May 10th, well, I get married this Saturday, by the way.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Get back from the honeymoon on May 10th, you know, it'll go into tournament mode, which is 3 practices a week. You know, that type of thing. And yeah, so I'm the guy that's there 3 times a week. The other teammates once or twice a week, yeah, as their schedule permits.
Are there other guys in Memphis that are doing sumo right now?
Yeah. Yeah. But guys, you know, Jason LaCroix, I mentioned earlier, Courtney Smith.
Oh, yeah.
Who
is
excellent.
And oh, really?
I bet he's really good.
Yeah, he is. He's smart and he's athletic. It's a dangerous combination. Yeah. If you don't beat Courtney, and I hope he hears this, if you don't beat Courtney off the line, you're probably going to lose, because if he gets a hold of the belt, he's going to judo throw. He's been doing a lot of judo training. He's good at that. What I do when I fight him, I make us start by holding the belt and what he's better at. So I have to just kind of,
I got 2 questions. Mm-hmm. One, if Mike shows up at this competition, does he have to wear the little thing?
Diaper? That's a great question, actually. Here's the international rules say, if I'm not mistaken, that you have to wear shorts underneath your mawashi. Now,
you have to.
Hmm. However, I have never been to a tournament yet where they required you to have them underneath there. I've always worn them. The Dutch Open, on the registration form, it says shorts are not allowed to be worn under the mawashi. Well, so I show up, put on my mawashi, and without pants underneath it. So it's the first time. And, you know, I train at Memphis Judo and Jiu-Jitsu. There's women and children there. I'm not going to wear that thing without shorts. That's what Dave's only request when I first started training. Just don't wear it without the...
Have your and tackle poking out the side of that
exactly,
thing.
Exactly. So, you know, so I show up to this thing, and so I'm getting ready. I look over, and the Egyptians all have their dang shorts on, and I'm like, what?
Well, damn Egyptians. Well, it's because every time they sumo wrestle,
that's right,
they wear those fucking shorts. Well, they're mawashi.
They're very, very good. By the way, there's a pro.
If you ask me that, I would bet there's no way in hell that anybody in Egypt sumo wrestles. I would just laugh in your face.
There's a guy there right now in the pro sumo in Japan. It's the first African, and being from Egypt, first African ever to be in pro sumo. And he's doing really well. I want to say he's in the Juro division, which is just like 1-2 divisions below the very, very top division, and he's just kicking butt.
That's fantastic.
And he's pretty impressive. But anyway, but they had it on, and it was, you know, religious reasons. They're Muslim. They didn't want, you know, you don't do that. And I'm like, well, I'm Catholic. There's something written somewhere, right? I'm not, no, but you know, you don't have to. And actually in Japan, I've heard that they're letting kids do, and that's, it doesn't get any more traditional than that as a culture, right, and for that sport. That's their NFL and NBA combined. And that's how those guys are looked at and that lifestyle. But they're letting some kids now in Japan wear the shorts because the kids don't want to do sumo because they don't want their buttocks.
Well, I was going to say, is there a problem with, the culture shifting, the art form dying, and kids being interested in it? Is it declining?
Yes. Yeah. In Japan?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because that culture is radically shifting, right?
I mean, yes.
The old ways, whatever, however you want to define that, I think have been washed away a little bit.
Right.
Figuratively speaking, not like tsunami.
Right.
Speaking, don't get me twisted.
Oh, jeez.
I was going to say, I think the looking back and respecting the history of it has been sort of giving way to, like everywhere else, pop culture from other parts, including our godforsaken nation, sometimes has spilled over and distracted them from what makes them unique.
Right. Well, you know, and a lot of that I've read that they blame it on, the Japanese blame it on video games and baseball. The kids are either playing baseball.
Damn baseball.
Fuck you, baseball.
They should outlaw that. All right, guys, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the top things from bodybuilding that has helped Robert be more athletic.
Hey guys, this is Rich Froning, and you're listening to Barbell Shrugged. For the video version, go to fitter.tv.
And we're back.
Shocking.
Doug, Chris, myself, and our guest, Robert Daniel, sumo wrestler.
Welcome back.
And since you had such a awesome bodybuilding background, we were going to ask you the top three reasons before we left, top three reasons what we can learn from bodybuilding. And basically, any suggestions you have to new lifters for putting on muscle mass?
Yeah. Right.
So, what are those top three things?
Exactly. Chop chop. As bodybuilding probably applies to CrossFit, the top things you can learn is, one, you don't need to move a weight like a bodybuilder moves weight. And I've mentioned this before, but bodybuilders try to be as inefficient as possible. Your joints, your tendons, your ligaments don't want to do any work. Your muscle bellies, the middle part of your muscle, wants to do all the work. So you need to do the most inefficient movement possible. Like a bodybuilding squat is vastly different than a powerlifting squat or anything, or a front squat that you would do for Olympic lifting, anything like that. So
what are those differences?
Well, one, you generally, the speed is the first thing. You're going to slow the heck down. And two, you're going to make your levers longer, whether it be your body, your arms, or your legs. Whatever's happening, the levers are going to be, you know, longer.
You're going to make it harder on purpose.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Preacher curls.
That's right. Correct. Yeah, that's a good example.
That or touching the bar really high on your chest when you bench press, I guess that's another way of doing it.
That's big.
Stretching everything as much as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, the more inefficient you can be, the easier it is to work the muscle.
Correct.
We're not training the movement like we are on CrossFit. We're working the muscle, which is different.
Right, which is also, are bodybuilders strong? Yeah, I don't know any pro bodybuilders that can't bench 405 for reps with these, that cannot do that. I mean, they all boom, 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 boom.
And in some cases, Stan Efferding is a pro IFBB, right, card holding bodybuilder who also is a current Masters all-time raw powerlifting champion. The guy squats 900 and belt and knee wraps, and he benches right at 6, and he deadlifts like 850, 840, 830.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like they're not mutually exclusive. So that's a good point. Like, the only thing I'd add to that is, like, yeah, you can train inefficiently like that to make it harder to gain muscle mass. And from that perspective, not a good thing for CrossFit. But on the other hand, you can do things in a slightly different way, like, you know, why is it good to do like a deficit deadlift? Well, you make that exercise really hard and you can use less weight, and that beats you up less, and you might get a good training response, but it also helps build your regular deadlift.
Right.
So making things hard is an interesting thing. Like, do you want to go down super duper duper slow ever if you're looking to perform? Probably not ever. But and there's other ways you can make things really super hard that cut down the wear and tear and let you be stronger and more explosive. So that's an interesting idea right there. We could probably do a whole show on that.
Yeah. Well, you know, what I was going to say earlier is that even though bodybuilders are very strong, the major difference in CrossFit is they're not functionally strong. Mm-hmm. Like your strength per body weight ratio for a CrossFitter, how many pull-ups can you see? Have you seen bodybuilders do? They do a lot of lat pull-downs, don't they?
It's like, how many breaths have I taken today? It's so routine. It seems doing that shit all the time. Right. You can't even keep count.
Lat pull-downs, lat pull-downs, lat pull-downs. But right. You put a 300-pound bodybuilder, and they're not going to be able to do very many pull-ups. But you go to CrossFit, and you do you count the kip-ups and all that stuff. I mean, there's reps and reps and reps and reps. So you're not as functionally strong as a bodybuilder because you're doing that training that we're talking about. Now, there's no absolutes. There's probably carryover on both. I look at the CrossFit games. Those guys are jacked.
Like, they are.
Some of these guys could enter at least a physique competition, not a bodybuilding, and win. They could literally leave the CrossFit games, step on stage, and win with the physiques they have.
Yeah.
That's just, they have to be that lean to move that fast, to be that strong, and get all that done. Mm-hmm. So I think that, the inefficiency of movement, the other thing, well, the thing that could help the most, is one thing bodybuilding gets right, and I used to, like you said, I have a degree in exercise science. Well, I used to actually argue with my teachers, but my professors were all aerobic oriented guys. They were endurance
jackasses.
Endurance. That's what they're also called.
It seems like most exercise physiologists really do kind of swing towards the endurance sports.
Yes, and it just makes me think, why do they call people like us meatheads? Well, okay, then what,
What does that make you?
Right. Well, let's just say the endurance guys tend to be the guys with the PhD. There's very few Fred Hatfields out there, Dr. Squatter, those guys. But anyway.
God bless Andy Galpin.
But I would literally argue with these guys that protein sparing by increasing your carbohydrates doesn't work. Increasing your carbohydrates is not going to make your body use protein more efficiently for muscle. Now, it will keep you from burning muscle, of course, but that's just calories, period. Mm-hmm. But what I was going to say is protein intake, and as long as it's not regular. Now, I'll be honest with you. I take about 500 grams of protein every day. So that's...
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Where do you get that from?
Well, shakes. So what I do is I'll eat 4 meals. And here's the way...
So for all of you who think you're eating a lot...
You ain't shit.
I'm trying to gain weight, but I eat all day. You're not eating 500 grams of protein a day.
Well,
might look like Robert.
That's right. This is fantastic. Tell us about your day as far as eating goes.
Well, here's how it works. I have to get to work at 6:30 or 7, and so I get to work.
Damn.
And I keep.
That's so crazy.
And what, right? There's 2 of those in the day? I thought it was just PM. I keep one whole drawer at work in the fridge. Is mine, and it's literally stacked with bags of flank steak and chicken breast chunks, like the Tyson. Boom, boom. Not that I wouldn't eat those if I was getting ready for a bodybuilding show, but day to day, it's cheap, it's quick, and it's also filled with like butter spray, mustard, low calorie, stuff to put on toppings, blah blah blah. And then I have about if you go and look at my car right now, you'll find 3 cases of RTDs, protein RTDs. There'll be 3 cases in the fridge.
Ready to go drinks.
Ready to drink.
Ready to drink, yeah. Mm-hmm. There'll be at least 3 to 4 cases in the fridge that are out of their cases, just put in there loose. And then there's 3 cases in the car. So I have 3, I keep all the time, 3 cases at work. I try to keep that every month. I just go restock. And so what I do is I get up and the first thing I do when I get to work is I'll make myself some breakfast. And generally that tends to be oatmeal. But the way I do it is this. So I don't use so much energy on digestion and I don't get bloated, I'll do 50 to 100 grams of carb at 6:30. Then I'll do 30 to 50 grams of protein at 7:30. Then the next hour is a carb hour and then a protein hour. The meal after.
So you're not eating carbs and protein together. You're alternating.
Correct. Then the meal, and that's just for me. That's not that I got from anybody, but I noticed that my body works more efficiently and I have more energy. Just the when I stuff myself with both, if I do 100 grams of carb and the protein together, I just get more sluggish. It's just that insulin release. And
yeah, I get so, that. Yeah.
But now with the exception of the meal after lunch, so I'll have lunches, whether it be whatever it hit, whether it be protein or carb. And I don't do the system perfectly. Sometimes I mess it up. Mm-hmm. But the meal before training or after lunch will be both together. And I'll have to deal with a heavy stomach because I'm going to need that energy for training, because when you're halfway through a sumo practice and you're sparring and all of a sudden you hit the wall, it's not fun.
Hit the wall hard.
Yeah. So I think the protein intake,
how many years you've been doing the high protein? I know the answer's probably a long time, but
the 500 grams, I would say two years.
Yeah.
2 years. And that has really made a difference in the composition of my physique. Even when I put on, like I was saying earlier, I'm 225 now. July 27th, when the World Games are in Colombia, I'll be between 240 and 250. And hopefully that will be mostly an increase in muscle mass. Well, how do you do that? Well, then I just up the protein and up the carbs, but I do still do the same thing.
I know what all those aerobic son of a bitch professors are saying right now, listening to the show, saying that guy is going to be dead of kidney cancer before you know it. This foolish man, 500 grams of protein. That's what the average American needs in a year.
But, but they would say, but you know, pro bodybuilders, they'll eat more than that. You know, and then so what do I do?
How much? I'm curious now.
You guys, I've seen pros with well, I've heard reports of you know,
reportedly,
right, you know, outside. I mean, they have to have their muscle mass is so huge, and they're burning so many calories and metabolism so fast that they'll do 1,000 to 2,000 grams of protein. I'm doing the math, right, and I'm going, Michael Phelps does 13,000 calories. Well, let's divide that by protein, carb, and fat. And I'm like, how do you get that much in? So I think those are, but I would say probably 700 to 800 is probably what they're really.
So basically, every living moment, these poor sons of bitches are shoving down a chicken breast and a shake and a chunk of meat and a chicken breast and a shake. I mean, one thing I tell people, like, you can have your issues with bodybuilding. Like, I wouldn't do that shit. Fine. Neither would I. But you got to acknowledge how fucking disciplined bodybuilders are. They throw everything in their lives on a fucking trash heap to do this thing and to do it the right way. That means this 800 grams of carbs. It means training a lot. And by the way, like, CrossFit is hard. Bodybuilding, strongman stuff is hard, but I wouldn't say so hard. I'd say bodybuilding training, what they put themselves through is masochistic. I mean, they're trying to make themselves hurt as much as possible. They're trying to burn as much as possible. They leave. They have another shitty meal. There's sleep patterns, everything. You know, some of these top guys, I guess, blowing like 50 grand a year or 100 grand a year on drugs to, I mean, everything you could sacrifice upon the altar to get huge as possible, they're doing. It's like extreme jihadists of the fitness world. They're going to fucking do this thing no matter what. Well, no matter what, you're going to die prematurely. I don't give a shit, son. I'm going to be huge. Right. And they do it, man. You got to give them credit for that. It's hard.
Yeah, it's a 24-hour job for sure.
How many shakes are you drinking a day, and what kind of shakes are there? Or do you keep it changed up?
Well, you know, here's how I put my shakes, my RTDs, or my bags of protein, is I'll do the I literally take my calculator on my phone when I'm going and looking at all the selection, either GNC or Sam's Club or the grocery store, wherever I'm at, and I will calculate dollar per gram of protein. Who has the most for what I'm paying, I will drink it. That's the one I go with. So let that be a lesson to all the supplement companies out there. More protein and a lower price, I'm going to pick your product. So
that's we got to develop a low-cost
protein. I think they're probably keyed into that one.
What's that?
I think they're probably keyed into that one.
Right,
the whole business is based around.
Right, right.
But, so for all the CrossFitters that listened to this, that all they heard just now was carb, protein, carb, protein, carb, protein. And in the CrossFit world, meat, veggies, nuts and seeds, some fruit, little starch, no sugar. Protein, veggies, and healthy fats is kind of the way of the world, right, in the paleo world. Maybe talk about that. Do you do any types of healthy fats intentionally added in? Do you do vegetables?
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to tell you. After training, or you know, after that big meal that I'll have before I train, every carb source after training is a vegetable source, with the exception of my post-workout drink, which is 50% sugary carb, 50% protein. That's that window of 30 minutes. And that's something I used from
magic
bodybuilding.
Magic window.
Yeah, right. That's I use that from bodybuilding for everything I do now. Because I just get more, my body recovers, you know. And then after that, when I go home for the rest of the night, every carbohydrate feeding is going to be preferably leafy greens, if I can get it. You know,
are you still keep alternating protein and carbs at that point? Or are you eating just vegetables?
No. That's a good point. I will eat the protein with the, because the greens, I just can't. If I was to fill up on greens, it would be, you know.
So as far as the fats go, are you intentionally going out of your way to get fats from maybe nuts, avocados, olive oil, coconut oil? Do you do any of that?
Well, if I'm doing like bodybuilding, yes. But if I'm doing sumo training, I generally get enough nutrition because I can eat anything I like that I'm going to get some of that stuff in there. And that's
for bodybuilding. You need calories, but you don't want the carb because you're trying to have this favorable transition and body composition.
Correct.
Sumo, you're trying to get huge.
Exactly. You need to be more powerful. You need to be a bigger, stronger machine. But like when I do a bodybuilding show, I'll take a multivitamin. Mm-hmm. But when I'm off season from bodybuilding, I'm sumo, I don't take a multivitamin because I'm getting so many calories that I know those vitamins are there. The chances of me having a deficiency are pretty slim.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I do that.
So tip number two was to use the workout window that you just mentioned.
Well, it's just up your protein intake. I'm thinking that if you want to do bigger muscles can't hurt you if your body weight stays low for CrossFit. I mean, just judging everything I've seen on TV and seen at your gym, it just seems to me like a gymnast, body weight, strength for body weight ratio is everything.
Well, I tell people all the time, when they come to me and, well, how much protein do I need? And most of the time they're getting like half the grams of protein per pound of body weight. You know, they weigh 200 pounds and they're like having a hard time getting 100 grams of protein.
Right.
And I laugh and I'm like, you need to get at least 200 grams of protein. And they think I'm crazy.
Right.
Like, you're eating double your body
That's
weight.
Exactly the so talk.
As soon as I get around 175 grams of protein, if I don't do that, I'll feel like shit.
Right.
And
I did that for like 2 years. I was getting too little protein. I stopped paying attention to it, and I woke up and realized it.
Were there any benchmarks of protein intake where you noticed big changes? Was it like, you know, oh, I used to do body weight, and then I went to, you know, body weight and a half for grams, and oh my God, it was amazing. I mean,
well, my first bodybuilding show I ever did in 1997 was the first time I ever logged any of my food. So I realized how little protein I was getting. That realization, like you just talked about, Chris. And so I got up to where I was doing, I think right before the show, like 700 grams of protein and very, very little carb. So, but as here's
awesome.
Here's the thing with body composition, how it works for me. The more protein I intake, the less appetite I have to feel. I can't feel, I'm full. So am I eating less? I don't want to eat cookies. I don't want to eat junk. Generally, you know, I don't want to do that stuff. You know when I want sweets or junk food? In the middle of the night when my stomach's empty. But when it's full of protein and or whatever else, then I'm, you know, I don't want to eat.
Yeah, if you got a belly full of a big chunk of awesome steak, you don't really left wanting for anything.
That's right.
That's great advice for a lot of people out there that are trying to only exclude things that they like from their diet, and they're not focusing on eating lots of good healthy food. If you're all full all the time from healthy paleo food, then you don't have those cravings for anything else, really.
Right.
Well, you don't have room for it.
I think there's some carryover for that bodybuilders can use from CrossFit. And here's the thing, is that, you know, with all that protein powder, and like I said, I take a RTD and I'll dump it in the the mixer, and then I'll take a scoop of protein powder and put it into the RTD. So like I just did gave myself
ready
a double.
Ready to drink asterisk.
Right. Right. So exactly. And so where was I going with that? Train of thought. Oh, but the problem is what's wrong with all those powders and RTD chemicals? Mm-hmm. There's not natural things in there. It's a bunch of chemicals. It's chemically produced. Mm-hmm. Well, the difference, and I look at the paleo diet, is you don't have all that. So the more of those sources bodybuilders can get, the better they're going to feel. Their energy level is going to be better, I think, if they can get enough calories in. And then the better they're going to perform in the gym, more muscle.
Yeah, I haven't seen any bodybuilder. Well, I haven't really looked, I'll be honest with you. But I haven't seen anybody who has taken on the challenge, like doing a paleo-type slant on. Like, it's just still, you know, grilled chicken breasts and plain veggies and rice on that side of the aisle. I'd like to see a guy experiment with a amped up paleo diet to see if he can succeed on a high level in bodybuilding. I don't know. I haven't heard of anybody doing
A bodybuilder does paleo. Not familiar.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's an interesting realization.
Maybe
for a
I
lot
will
of people.
Take on this experiment. I'll get ripped. I'll get shredded and ripped.
And then
I'll
we're going to put in a bodybuilding show.
Robert and I will. I won't stay next to Robert, but we'll enter the same show and I'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll see. I eat 700 fucking grams of protein a day. We'll see what happens.
I don't think I could do it. 700 grams a day.
No, you know,
I tell you guys, it's not the diet. It's not the how much it takes, like as far as me being full or just, oh, this is too much protein. it's the organization and the timing and the.
I'm not a very organized person.
Like I set my alarm. I set my phone alarm to go off an hour, and the alarm will go off and go protein. Then when I take my protein, I'll put the alarm in for an hour from then. Says carb. That'll go off. And now, but I sit at a desk all day. So I'm food, protein. And it's a joke at work. If you go talk to guys, tell me something about Robert Daniel. And they'll go, dude, he's constantly eating. He's constantly eating. Mm-hmm. You know.
What are your favorite sources of carbs besides oatmeal?
Man, I love potatoes. I love them. I love them. I love
white. Irish Catholic.
There you go. Exactly. I love, and this is, I think, from living in Hawaii, but if I can get Calrose, not, you know, they call sticky rice here, it's all kinds of things, but you go to Hawaii or Japan, and the rice they have there is called Calrose rice, and it's that's real sticky rice. Mm-hmm. And it's not sticky because they overcooked it, it's sticky because the glucose in it is greater. There's a higher sugar content, and it's delicious. So I love white rice.
Have that in a big plate of spam. Ready to go.
There you go. That's exactly. And I'm not afraid to say I hate brown rice. I just hate it. I will eat it if I have to prepare for something. Preparing for sumo, sky's the limit. If I want a Twix bar, I'll go have it. If that's what I feel like.
It's my kind of sport.
Right. if my weight's within reason.
So you know, if you're trying to gain as much weight as possible and there's a Twix bar in front of you, you'll just crush that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Now, if I have to pick between the protein and the Twix, and it's, you know, I'm not going to go for the Twix if it's time for my protein feeding. Obviously, there's not enough protein in a candy bar. But
not by your standards, bro.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know, what's funny is I'll look at those, like the drinks they'll have at Walgreens. They call them protein drinks and about 7 grams. I'm like, yeah.
Get out of here, right. Son.
And it'll take me 84 of these for feeding.
So $500 later, I've got my 500 grams of protein.
That's right.
How much do you spend on groceries?
About $800 a month.
That's not bad.
That's not bad.
Well, dude, what are you?
Is that just for you, or is that for you and your fiance?
That's just for me. That's just for me.
So you are finding bargains, because that actually sounds pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I go to, like I said, Sam's Club is where I get my protein. But see, this is all I do, is I get the protein powders and then the RTDs. I'll get the bags of rice, the 90 seconds. See, everything's already prepackaged. The need to carry Tupperware for bodybuilders to do that anymore is almost gone. You know, everything's prepackaged. So I'll get the Uncle Ben's prepackaged rice, the little things of prepackaged rice. They have, you know, these different brands.
You just stick it in the microwave in the bag or something?
Yeah, 45 to 90 seconds. Some of them are 45 seconds. Some are 90, and I'll have two or three at a time. Mm-hmm. Jeez. You should see me at Kroger.
You just get like Uncle Ben's white rice?
Yeah, yeah. Or they have flavors. Too, yeah. Chicken, and then there's broccoli and cheddar, and then there's all kinds of stuff.
I've been cooking for myself. This is terrible.
What? 2013, there's no need.
I've been shopping at Whole Foods, and I should have been at Costco this whole time.
If you go to Kroger or Whole Foods, wherever, they've got all kinds of shit wrapped in plastic ready for you to eat. Wake up, man. Join modern world. All kinds of treats and cookies and all kinds of shit.
Well, you know what's funny, though, is that if you see me like at a Kroger and I'm getting literally I'll buy everything for the month. So I'll get 160 of those rice packets at once. And these little old ladies will look at me like, you selfish prick. I can't believe. And I look at
Excuse me, sir. Do you have any more rice in the back?
Like, were these rationed? Were you planning? Did you want to get some of these? And no, I want to. But they'll just look at me like I'm being awful. I'm like, I'm going to eat all these. I'm not wasting.
Of course I'm going to eat them.
I'm paying for them and I'm going to eat them. This
is America. If I can't buy all the rice in a store and eat it all myself, why did the Declaration of Independence ever get written?
I promise you, Kroger wishes they had 1,000 guys like me.
All right, so what's one more thing that CrossFitters could learn from bodybuilders?
Talk about how it's not necessarily a bad thing to train a muscle. Like, that's sort of a buzzy thing now. So I suppose people would maybe put the bench press sometimes in that, but certain like curls or maybe like a hamstring curl or, I don't know, there's lots of shoulder raises and stuff. I guess you won't see that going on barely ever in a CrossFit box.
I'll say this, though. I don't know if you know Jennifer Robinson. She's a physique pro here in Memphis. And every once in a while I'll train with her. And just like other pros, if you watch YouTube videos, they're so damn creative. Or they've already learned the exercises they come up with. Like, she tries to kill me, you know, not even meaning to, but her exercises are so inefficient and tough. So if you're doing anything that requires explosion from your lower body, you know, working your hamstrings is never going to be a bad thing. You know, I mean, now you could overwork it. Absolutely. But just those ancillary exercises that you do for these major performance moves are going to help you.
Yeah. So these exercises, like you can maybe call it glute ham raise, basically just a glorified fucking hamstring curl. barbell curls, stuff like that.
Yeah, I've definitely done glute ham raise for the hamstring. That's
not a really impressive lifter I can name who doesn't do at least some things that aren't with a barbell and don't have direct carryover to competitive lifts. Like even really, really excellent weightlifters who 90% of the time they're going to do the lifts and their assistance work is squatting. Mm-hmm. That's what they do, and that's what makes them great. But they do. You'll see a guy do like the Chinese team doing terminal knee extensions, the hamstring curls, or maybe you could even get a little close to other, let's say, barbell rows or dumbbell rows and things that a lot of people say, look, you don't need to do that. Don't waste your time. But successful people do it and get benefit from it. So, building the ability for one part of your body to work more seems to have, it's hard to measure, hard to really get your head around, but seems to have a carryover to the lifts that utilize that part of the body. But then you're lifting better. Like a hamstring curl has always, a glute ham raise with a little bit of bandage has always helped me deadlift better. Can't tell you why, but I always feel immediately faster when I do that exercise.
Mm-hmm. Maybe let's turn that around. Instead of talking about how bodybuilding can help or what CrossFitters could learn from bodybuilders, where do you guys think CrossFitters have it 100% spot on right and we should not be training like bodybuilders?
Can I tell you one thing?
Yeah.
Go for it. Freaking pull-ups, man. That's the best back exercise ever that bodybuilders could get from CrossFit. If that's what kind of you're saying, is that what you're asking me?
We can touch on that.
Okay. The fact that pull-ups, to get good at them, you have to do so many reps. But when you first start, especially if you're a bodybuilder, you're 250 pounds and you haven't been doing it, you're going to do one rep that's good. And that's it. And then you have to wait for 30 seconds to a minute and then do one rep. So it takes patience. But the level of strength gain and therefore the level of mass gain, time under contraction, is super.
Remember? Yeah, I used to do a lot of pull downs of all kinds. I power lifted. And it's good. But you can get to where you can do a pull down with like the whole stack for like 20 reps. And you can still maybe not even do five decent pull ups. To me, it's like there's zero. It's like bench pressing. You can bench press all you want. But it has zero carryover to like a standing strict press. If you bench press 500 pounds, I don't care. Let me see you do a strict press. You may do 185. I don't know. There's no correlation really. But if you get to where you can press twice your body weight or something overhead, you're going to bench press just fine. So think if you're a guy who can do 45, 50 pull-ups with no problem, you got no problem when you get on a pull-up machine. You're going to be just fine. And your back's probably going to be V-tapered like a son of a bitch.
Yeah, man.
Like those top CrossFitters have physiques that feature a pretty damn good set of back muscles, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm. It's probably from the Concept 2 rower.
On that note, I think I actually think CrossFitters could do more strict pull-ups as well. CrossFitters do a lot of kipping pull-ups, and occasionally they do weighted pull-ups, but I think they could do more just straight-up dead-hang bodyweight pull-ups on the rings and on the bar.
You think it would make your kipping pull-ups feel so much easier. I think it'd have a mental benefit to that.
Following last year's regionals, I had the whole team for a month. It was like no kipping for a month, just to save the shoulders.
Well, if it makes y'all feel any better, my kipping pull up is way worse than my regular pull up.
I want to see it.
I watch videos and I go, okay, I could do. And I told you, I said one of these days, I like to do the powerlifting, the Olympic lifting, the strongman, and I said, okay, I'm gonna throw in some CrossFit in there. I'm gonna do these faction games once a year, blah. And so I go over there and I'm in the gym and I'm trying to do a kipping pull up and I'm opening up my shoulders and trying to close and kip up and I'm like, I look like an idiot.
It takes some practice, man.
So, if somebody
discovered CrossFit again, that jackass in the corner.
Right.
You need to set out a year and do that. So you do CrossFit, strongman, powerlifting, weightlifting, sumo, and then maybe you get crazy, like try to throw in like judo and a couple other things there. Just see. You can maybe set a record for doing the most crazy shit in a year.
We'll make an artsy-fartsy video about it.
Right. Yeah. Well, or one of those.
Robert Daniel.
The Arnold. What is it?
The ultimate strength. Conditioning.
Yeah, you go to the Arnold and compete in everything in the Arnold.
I think it'd be more like Robert Daniel, the most injured.
The guy who sucks at the most stuff.
Very mediocre.
Finished last in every meet.
Jack of all trades, the Robert Daniel story.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, let's go ahead and wrap this up. Doug, I'm going to let you go with your plug first.
Since it's kind of a time sensitive thing right now, we have Justin Thacker's weightlifting seminar coming up here in. We're looking at 2 or 3 weeks, so if you want to come to that, you got to jump on that right away. Again, go to barbellstruck.com, click on the shop, click on seminars, and then it's a weightlifting seminar with Justin Thacker.
$797
for that 2-day event. Again, that is a not necessarily a seminar. It's really a live recording. So the intention is for us to make a weightlifting product. So as part of that event, you might be on camera and you're going to be getting a lot of one-on-one attention from Justin on that 2-day seminar. So if you want to be a part of that, again, go sign up as soon as possible because that event is coming up here in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
All right. Anything you want to promote? Memphis, BJJ maybe?
No, if anybody's interested in trying sumo, just give us a call at Memphis Judo and Jiu-Jitsu, and Dave Ferguson, the owner over there, can put you in touch with me. You know, there's a lot of people say they are, but if they show up maybe once or twice, you know, come give it a shot.
If I get rid of my belly, I may put that thing on.
If you did, particularly if anybody out there did any wrestling and football, those are the perfect people. They did both high school wrestling and high school football. They want to do something now. Bingo.
They should sumo.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, maybe if people are bored this weekend, they come by. If they're in the Memphis area, come by to your wedding. Say hello.
Right. Add them on to the 375. They're going to be there.
So, yeah.
Whoa.
Exactly.
Man. Yeah.
How many shrimp cocktails you got to order for this thing?
I don't know. But yeah, but it's a big wedding.
Congratulations again, man. That's awesome.
Thank you.
What shall I plug? I don't know, man. How about this? Follow me on the Twitter. My handle. Is that what it's called? Your name on Twitter?
I think so.
Twitter handle?
Yeah.
@ChrisMoreXL. Shoot me a message. We'll talk. We'll, in 140 characters at a time, we'll regale each other with all kinds of stories about training and life and philosophy and whatever else you can think of. And cruise on by the ChrisMoreBlog.com. The ChrisMoreBlog.com. The only ChrisMoreBlog.com blog on Google.
All right. Make sure to follow me on Twitter as well, @MichaelBledsoe. Do not follow CTP. We're having a competition right now.
Do not.
And get the most followers. So follow me, @CTP_faction.
What if we're both already following you? Who should we drop? Who should we unfollow? Tell us your rationale right now.
So what?
Who should we unfollow if we're following both of you? Because you can also lose and win. Whoever loses the most will lose in us. Like if you lose 100 followers, you have the advantage.
Why would I lose followers?
I'm saying, convince people to defollow him or unfollow him.
Oh, yeah.
And follow
everyone
you.
Stop following CTP.
Net followers is what you're just
net followers.
That's what I meant to say.
Yeah. Excellent. Make sure to go to barbellshrug.com, put your name in for the newsletter, and so you can get updated on the cool stuff we're doing. We got a lot of stuff coming up. So if you don't want to miss it and you're not able to watch every single show and hear about what's happening, sign up for that. Plus, we get very forgetful on the show, but we're pretty good at the email.
Or, you know, just ignore everything we told you and hurt our feelings. Why don't you? See if we care. We're going to cry ourselves to sleep tonight.
That's right. Thanks for coming on the show, Robert.
Hey, thank you, guys.